The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. Approaching 4 minutes past nine on this Monday, the 29th of June, 2026. I hope you're very well. I hope you had a nice weekend. We did, which is nice and relaxed. Got out a bit too, so all good. And we're all set for another week, and we've got a busy show for you today, as we do every single day here on The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio. Thanks so much to all of you who tune in, by the way, so regularly. It is appreciated. The lines are open for you to get involved. You don't just have to listen. You can have your say. Raise your own issues, pass on your own information, spread some good news, whatever you want to do, or comment on what we've got lined up for you. Here's the contact details, 086 60 25,000. Such a familiar number, isn't it, to you? But put it in your phone. You never know when you might need it. That's your WhatsApps. That's your texts. You can always give us a call, 07491 25,000. Donna Marie and Katie taking your calls today. And emails come into us, comments at highlandradio.com. And if you want to watch the show, of course, we have a visual presentation of the show every single day. You can watch it on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, Smart TV, Fire Stick mobile devices. We're across Facebook and on the X platform as well. On to the papers and the Derry People, Donegal News. And hearts go out to the Murray family, particularly Christy Murray, who'd be well known to many of you. They are still awaiting the return of Ronan's body. They suspect he entered the sea. A heartbroken family's hopes of locating a missing loved one safe and well are fading, with efforts now focused on recovering the body. The family, which includes famous Donegal piper Christy Murray, has appealed for help to find the remains of Christy's nephew Ronan Strain. When Ronan went missing last month, the family appealed for information to help find him safe and well, but Christy now fears the worst and told the paper, "We may have to use DNA to identify him. We'll see when we find the body." And it was suspected that Ronan entered the water on the east coast. And if he hasn't been found yet, it's going to take perhaps a stroke of luck because of the movement of tides and everything as to where his remains may end up. But until such time as that happens, it's incredibly, incredibly difficult for that family, of course. And it will be very difficult if his remains are found. But I think you understand that you can sort of progress with grief and everything else that we have to endure as humans. The Irish Daily Mail. There could be some good news if you are a middle-income earner, I suspect. Proposed tax cuts are expected to be backed by a report into dealing with the cost of living crisis by the powerful Budgetary Oversight Committee. The report due this week will give tarnish to Simon Harris's tax-cutting plans a major shot in the arm by supporting the full indexation of tax bans to inflation. In a draft of its key recommendations seen by the Irish Daily Mail, the report will propose that Budget 2027 provide for the indexation of income tax bans and tax credits to inflation. Indexing the tax bans means they rise in line with inflation and wages, so lower earners are not drawn into higher tax bans as their income rises. The only thing about this is I'm not sure the government, any government, by the way, would want this to be a sort of a default, because if it's an expectation, then I suppose if you're coming into an election, you can't really reframe it as a, you know, a budget for workers or putting such and such amount of money back in your pocket. It's locked in. So we'll see. It perhaps, I think they like to have that in their arsenal to announce at budget time. One government minister noted Harris will be a very happy man this week. There's been a parade of tax cut deniers across the airwaves in recent months. Now he has the support of the main committee in charge of supervising his department, the minister said. So there you go. Maybe I'm misreading it. On to the Irish Times now, one of their top stories, government cautious on drug decriminalisation proposals. And I'm reading this because it's an update to the conversation we were having last week. And I know quite a few of you are taking an interest in this. There seems to be cross-party support for the decriminalisation of drugs. But there's quite a bit of resistance out there as well, and it would seem that some coming from within government. Proposals from an Oireachtas committee to decriminalise the possession of drugs for personal use will not be followed by the government, several senior figures have indicated. Ministers have signalled caution about the committee's proposals since their publication last week, but privately, a series of senior figures in both parties said decriminalisation will not be implemented in the lifetime of the coalition. both Taoiseach Micheál Martin and Taoiseach Simon Harris are said by sources familiar with their views to have significant reservations about the proposals. Harris, who has repeatedly argued that occasional or recreational drug users should understand that the off-funding gangland criminality, is understood to be strongly opposed to decriminalisation. So whilst there was this cross-party Oireachtas Committee recommendation, the people that actually call the shots, the government in this case, the two leaders of it, or the top two guys, aren't in favour of it. And it might not, or should not, or would not, sorry, happen, or will not happen in the lifetime of this government. Now, this is an issue, and I'm reading this story because it might reach, you know, one person, five people, I don't know, but it could be a significant development in those who are in domestic abuse relationships, domestic violence featured relationships. Housing Minister James Brown is introducing new rules that will allow victims and survivors of domestic abuse to transfer time spent on a social housing waiting list if they move to a different local authority. Under the new protocol, any domestic abuse survivor who already has an active social housing support application will be able to apply to another council while keeping their original qualification date. The qualification date determines their place on the waiting list. So, you know, maybe this could have been used as a way of trapping someone in an abusive relationship. You know, if you move, well, you know, your 4 years on the waiting list are lost or whatever. So I think this might be relevant to some people. Up to now, victims who moved to another area lost their place on the list, a problem highlighted by campaign groups as a barrier for those trying to escape abusive situations. So we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that as to when it is introduced. We heard reference, because we didn't know at the time, to the fire in South Donegal. It happened around about the time of the thunder and lightning storm that we had. I'm not attributing it to that. I'm just saying, and we didn't really know who was involved, because, I mean, it's a personal matter, and unless it's made public, you don't know. But there's widespread coverage of it, locally, of course, but also nationally. And the home was that of a firefighter, can you believe, and his family. Well, they're devastated after they lost their home and possessions in a blaze. Fergal Gatens, who works for the Donegal Firefighters Association, and his wife Niamh and their six children lost everything in the inferno at their home in Killybegs on Thursday night. Gardaí and fire services responded to a report of a fire at a residence in Killybegs at around 8:40 p.m. on Thursday evening. Roads in the area were temporarily closed as emergency services dealt with the fire incident. Thankfully, no injuries were reported, but the family have been left with just the clothes on their backs. And the Donegal Firefighters Association has since set up a GoFundMe to help the family get back on their feet. They wrote, "The Donegal Firefighters Association have launched this GoFundMe campaign to support our member and firefighter in Killybegs Fire Brigade, Fergal Gatens, and his family." So that's out there, by the way. You can just search that if you want to, if you want to donate. And we're always very, very generous here in this county. And the fire is brutal. We've covered it many times. Not that fire, obviously, different fires. And you just lose absolutely everything. And it's incredibly traumatic. The coverage following the conviction of Jeffrey Donaldson continues. There's been a call for the North's Police Ombudsman to investigate the PSNI and what it may have been aware of regarding Jeffrey Donaldson's child sex abuse offences. Independent unionist MLA Doug Beattie has said he's written to the Ombudsman asking for a full investigation into the intelligence held by the PSNI about Donaldson offending and whether any consideration was given to how this could impact national security. There was a little bit of information given out about this, and I'm not suggesting any wrongdoing, but you can see how wrongdoing can happen, because there was a meeting some time ago before either complainants A or B came forward, whereby there was a meeting whereby one of those complainants talked about a person being responsible for abusing them. And the person's name wasn't mentioned, but a couple of police that were at that meeting were of the view that it was Jeffrey Donaldson. Now, they didn't do anything until such time as the complainant came forward. And you would just wonder, wouldn't you, are there situations, you know, where high-profile people, and I'm not saying it's the case in this case, but high-profile people could be protected? Because what would have been expected at time, or what could have happened, is that this could have been seen as a national security issue. It could have even been raised at 10 Downing Street. Can you imagine if there was a conversation saying, well, you know, it hasn't gone public, let's wait and see. Whereas a person could continue to have contact with children, for an example. I'm not saying anything he was covered up, but you can see how the information gets into the, you know, the wheelhouse of power, and sometimes things aren't done. Maybe something would have been done, but this really then only became apparent after one of the complainants came forward. But there was some knowledge there. And finally, I think it's kind of like a rite of passage, is it, for girls, mostly girls, you know, to start understanding their femininity and looking after their face or their skin, or, you know, wee beauty regimes or get ready for me's for social media and what have you. And it's fun. But the one thing is being warned about today in the papers is not to overdo skincare as a teenager, as it can do more harm than good. Experts found evidence that social media trends are putting younger people to use active ingredients intended for adults. A dermatologist, Dr. Kovacs, warned young skin is not yet mature, so is more sensitive and vulnerable to active ingredients than adult skin. So in other words, just get, if they're going to have a bit of fun with it, just make sure, or even just try and, you know, protect the skin just to make sure that it is for kids and not for adults. Right, we're going to be talking football a little later on. What a weekend of GEA it was, both locally and nationally. We have our four finalists in the All-Ireland, don't we? It's going to be a cracking set of games. Dublin are going to play Kerry, and it is Louth versus Mayo. Louth, unbelievable. I was watching that game yesterday, and, you know, we talked about Donegal's performance and, you know, looking jaded or cramped or a lack of intensity. And then you see Louth, 14 men for the majority of that game, bar 6 minutes. And talk about fitness, talk about intensity, both two at a later stage in the campaign. You wonder, are there lessons to be learned there? But as I say, a great weekend of football. Tyrone will be feeling very hard done by, I think. A few decisions went against them, but they were excellent against Kerry. They eventually lost out. Mayo beat Cork, who were on, I thought Cork weren't fantastic. Louth, that amazing performance against Monaghan. And Dublin, they are back. I think they're always a team, aren't they, that build towards the business end of a championship. And they, I think a lot of people would have fancied Galway to win that game, but Dublin showed their resolve, and that mixture of youth and seniority, meaning that they have set up that semi-final clash with Kerry Sunday, July 12th. Mayo versus Louth is on the Saturday, July 11th, and there was plenty of local action as well. Pádraic Hilferty will be deputising for Brendan Devaney to discuss the weekend's action and to look forward to tonight's DL debate. That's a little later on in the programme. If you have any reaction to that, the big story of the weekend, though, forget your Kerrys and your Corks and your Monaghans and your Galway. What about Neave Breage? 3-14 to 10 points. They beat Neave Connell, my old club, and they are now promoted to Division 2 under the captainship of Gerard Gallagher as well, too. A neighbour of mine. So fantastic for Neave Breage. 3-14 to 10 points winners over Neave Columkill, securing Division 2 football. That is the big result. Disappointed but not surprised to hear more misinformation from Greg on climate change fraud on Friday. Okay, well, I wasn't... Again, I would love to have these conversations without these sweeping accusations. But anyway, I presented, apparently, propaganda as fact without any evidence to support its non-unbiased and trustworthy reporting. Evidence that contradicts the climate disaster narrative is buried or ignored, as are all the scientists who disagree. There never is any genuine debate on the issue, probably because the fraud could be debunked in minutes by anyone willing to do a little research. Well, doing a little research means that what you will end up doing is coming up with a view that will back yours. I've just said, and I've stated as fact, and I wasn't trying to do anything dodgy or spread anything, was the overwhelming majority of scientists are of the view that climate change and the climate crisis is a thing. That's all I can go by. Nice wee note from Doreen Sheridan, who's a friend of the show, of course, big Fine Gael, so I'm not surprised that she was a fan of our latest podcast. But thank you very much, Doreen, for taking the time to give us a little bit of feedback. The latest guest is and was Dinny McGinley. Dear Caroline and Greg, just to say I loved the interview on the podcast of Dinny McGinley. You covered a vast piece of history and it was wonderful to hear his view and accounts of his journey. Great, he's so well and enjoying his retirement. Well done to both. Yes, indeed, I enjoyed that conversation. I really did. The one thing I will say, though, is that, you know, Dinny is, he's a pro and he's still a pro. And there's some good information in there, but he also knows how to keep his cards close to his chest as well, too. But it's nice to hear how he started his education, his move into politics, which was a happenstance to some extent, and his political career, which was kind of mostly in opposition until the latter stages of the career where he held a few ministries and what he's doing now. So it was all very interesting. That podcast is available for you to listen to whenever you wish on our website, highlandradio.com. And also just search wherever you get your podcasts, the Greg Hughes podcast. It's on Spotify, iTunes, YouTube, all of them. So everyone has a favourite. So there you go. Right, the Justice Minister says it would be totally inappropriate to establish a public inquiry into the Crucial explosion before the criminal investigation has concluded. As far as I'm aware, this is the most definitive answer from government so far as to how a public inquiry might progress. Donna Harper is mother of Leona, who died alongside nine others in the awful Creusa explosion. Donna, thanks for joining me. As I say, this is quite categoric from the Justice Minister. He says until such time as the criminal investigation is over, a public inquiry will not be established. What's your reaction to that?
You know, Greg, at the moment it's unbelievable that they keep coming back and putting it on the Garda criminal investigation because, I mean, public inquiries has ran alongside investigations before in this country. Drew Harris himself even stated that before. But there's so many serious questions there that need to be answered that lie outside of the Garda criminal investigation. I mean, I can even give you an example here, you know, because it's been documented by Dara O'Brien that the CRU and the government had known of issues with LPG gas systems since 2016. And in 2023, there was an amendment started to be made to gas safety legislation, Greg. And 2026, it was presented to the Dáil, and the legislation is flawed. I can give you an example of there is a grandfather law attached to this. You know, there's so many questions raised by this amendment. Why did it take 10 years to make this amendment? Why was it not done in the 6 years previous to the Creusa explosion? And why start on amending legislation then in 2023? I mean, these are some of the very serious questions that we have. I mean, you've got Lewis O'Hara, who also stated that there are serious flaws in this legislation, and it does come 10 years after the initial concerns were even discovered, Greg, you know. Rita Cronin, now if I'm pronouncing her name right, she also states that concerns had been raised with the minister on several occasions and have ultimately been ignored. And she's also saying, why is it coming 10 years after when these concerns were raised in 2016? I mean, there's a high risk of public safety here, lack of legislation going on, you know. There's so many serious questions there. You've even got a historical aspect to this, and that reflects to what is believed to be identifying over hundreds places here. So there's a lot of serious questions there. I mean, since the establishment of government and the CRU, their mandate was built for one purpose and one purpose only, and that was to keep the citizens of this country safe since 2016. To keep this country safe. And since 2016, they have failed it. So, I mean, there's only some of the serious questions that we've got for government, and the only way we're going to get them answers is through our public inquiry.
Obviously, that the campaign and,
you know,
for a public...
They're not going to be answered under a... they're not going to be answered under a Garda investigation.
Yeah, but the government is not ruling out a public inquiry at this point. Do you accept the Justice Minister's clarity that he believes that the criminal inquiry needs to be concluded first. In other words, you're not in a grey area, you know. Or does this mean that you re-intensify the campaign, or indeed during a meeting that's being scheduled with the Taoiseach, that you try and get him to overrule the Justice Minister? What next, like, is what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Like, we're just waiting on a date now from the Taoiseach. He has said that he's going to meet us, so we're just waiting on that date. And, of course, we're going to be calling for this public inquiry. Like, it's so important. We're coming into 4 years here. We have no answers. There's so many important questions that lie outside of the Garda criminal investigation. And it has been stated by Drew Harris. And as we all know, there has been public inquiries run alongside Garda investigations before. So why is the government holding back and not giving us that inquiry now, when there's so many important questions, when this is one of the biggest disasters in the history of the state? Why has the government gone hiding into the shadows and not done anything for us to help us? I mean, ten people were killed, and then it comes under the Irish law, the Irish constitution, when there's a mass loss of life. 10 people were killed. Mm. The government, that is their job, is to step in to see what wrongdoings were done, what failures occurred, to go ahead and make changes. They didn't even do that. So it's really important that we get this public inquiry. And I don't understand why the government are sitting on their heels and not doing a thing.
Obviously, you know, the government might have their reasons as to why, and they may have gotten advice that says, look, you know, it's far better if we keep the criminal investigation and the public inquiry separate. They're committed to the public inquiry down the line. So as to say, you know, it might seem legitimate to some, but to others, they're going to feel like, well, what are you hiding?
Well, exactly, Greg. You know, and it's like, they're not even talking to us. We're going to meetings. There's nobody explaining anything to us. They just keep putting it back on the Garda criminal investigation. And so far, we're all happy with what the guards are doing. They're doing their job. So why do they keep putting it on back on the Garda criminal investigation when they know that there's serious questions that need to be answered, which we're only going to get them questions through a public inquiry? The Garda criminal investigation aren't going to give us the answers to the questions that we have, and the government know that. And for them to keep staying, wait till this is over, meaning the Garda criminal investigation, how long is that going to take? You know, are we going to be sitting here in 10 years' time with somebody else, new justice ministers and so on, and us having to go all through this again? You know, how long is it going to take? We don't know how long it's going to take for the Garda criminal investigation. We don't even have inquests. We have nothing. So are we expected as families to sit here for another 10 years waiting on something like that? Take Garda investigations over, and then the government might, as their words, consider it. It's just not good enough. Like, the government have failed us. The government are failing us. They're not even upholding the Irish constitution. When I'm talking about that they're not even upholding the Irish constitution, it's exactly, go back to what I just said, is when there's such a mass loss of life, the government are supposed to step in. They're supposed to look at what's going on. They're not even doing that. The government just went away into the shadows. And when it's the weeks and the months after that they'll do anything for the families, no matter what they want, they'll get the help that they want. We've even had to fight even to get meetings. So why would they publicly state that?
Yeah, it's concerning. And I mean, obviously, then you can look at what ends up being generational battles for similar measures. You know, we've seen the examples on this island. I know it's not a public inquiry, but, you know, here in Donegal, there is still a report into alleged planning corruption that's sitting on someone's desk in Dublin that was concluded, submitted in 2017, 9 years later, still no sight of that. So, you know, as I say, I'm sorry to conflate issues, but you look at accountability in other parts of the county, and even accountability in the building space in within the county. And, you know, I can understand how people start having a distrust of the potential for truth. You know, so we'll see.
Well, absolutely, Greg. It seems to be anything in this county at all. Is it that it's the forgotten county? Is it that they don't care because it's Donegal? If these things happened in Dublin, would it have been sorted long ago.
I don't know. In this case, I think in this case we haven't an island-wide fantastic history in public inquiries, and I don't think we're being singled out on this one. I understand exactly where you're coming from, but okay. Well, listen, Donna, obviously we'll keep track, we'll keep in touch, we'll see when this meeting with the Taoiseach is scheduled and what comes from that. But I imagine, you know, the Justice Minister is not in a solo run. They've obviously decided this, but we shall see. Donna Harper, thank you so very much indeed. Right, let's go to James McSkeen, who was in contact with us with serious concerns over the impact of a loss of a water supply. In what space, James? Good morning to you. Whereabouts was the water out for and for how long?
Hi, Greg. So I'm out in Glenagibney, so just above Kinnegal Bay. The water was out from Wednesday through Saturday, from Glenagibney all the way to Carmina, and as far as I think Kildaff as well.
Now, thankfully, the water is back on. It came on Saturday evening, but that's not really the end of the story because it was off for 5 days and really showed an issue we have in terms of communication. Because what was it like during one of the hottest periods we've seen with no water? What was the experience of you and your family?
So it was even just for the last 4 or 5 days. The water has been continuously been going off for the last number of months. This was just the longest spell where the water had been off for 4 or 5 days. But myself, who has a young family, I have 3 kids. I have elderly parents who live nearby. My father's had 2 strokes. My mother has dementia. We effectively look after them. When you don't have water for 4 or 5 days, it becomes almost like a public safety concern for families because you've no water to flush toilets, clean clothes, and like little things that if there was an emergency, like I'll give an example. My father, who has had a stroke, he's very unsteady in his feet. He burnt his hand a few months ago because he leant forward because he was unsteady. If you have to go to the tap to treat a burn and there's no water, these little things start to be compounded. So it kind of got to the point where on Saturday evening, I was seriously considering just going to one of the local hotels because nobody had had a shower. And it was getting to the point where the messaging from Uisce Éireann, it seemed to be reactive opposed to being proactive. The messaging was suggesting that the water was actually going to go off on Saturday night to resume on Monday, but it came back on Saturday night. So even today, I'm still not sure what the problem was. Is it resolved? Is it a problem with the reservoir? I know someone was saying that there was a burst pipe in Kildaff. But again, this is ongoing over the last number of months, talking to other families in the area who have young children. This is becoming a significant problem. And also when you have a heat wave, which was the biggest heat wave in Europe, since these measures have been calculated, we have no water for 4 or 5 days.
So if, say, for instance, with your electricity supply, if your power goes out, in fairness to the ESB, they have a good website that you can go on. It'll give you an estimated return. Sometimes it slips, but the information is there. It seems regularly updated. It gives you numbers that are affected and all that. So, again, you know, you're without a service, but there is a sense in 99% of the cases that there's information there. We'll just focus on the most recent outage. What kind of communication or information when you're in the midst of a 4 or 5 day outage is there from Uisce Éireann? What's the back and forth? Where can you go to get information? How do you find out potential return dates? Is it just through their social media or what's the situation?
So this was another thing. You can go to the Uisce Éireann website and you can sign up for the text alerts. I was getting the text alerts, but the text alerts were not quite tallying up with what was saying on the website. So again, I was somewhat unsure. And then they have different areas within. When you go onto their website, there's a map. You can see where it will kind of highlight where there's issues in the supply. So there seemed to be an issue of the supply in Kildaff. There seemed to be an issue of the supply in Lakemie. I didn't quite know which of those were affecting us because I know that people in Carmina got their water back, I think, on Friday. Yeah. Ours came back on Saturday evening. And then they also had a message up saying that if anybody needed water, they could go to Lakemie. There's a church there and they have a facility for people for drinking water. But again, Lakemie Church is 8 kilometres from where we're at in Kinnegal Bay. So that's an 8 kilometer trip there, 8 kilometer trip back, just to get drinking water.
Yeah, and of course, you mentioned your parents. It's good that you live beside them, but if you didn't, neither of them obviously could travel to Lecumay to get the water. So it's of no use or no consequence to them. They're just lucky to have you close to them, whereby you can do that type of stuff.
And exactly, and as like we could have been away on holiday this week, and then it would fall to maybe my brother and sister who live much further away. They're going to have to travel maybe 30 miles just to come in and do the same thing. And again, the thing that I think upset me the most was that there was no other checks, no, and nobody visited my parents' house. They're not kind of tech savvy, so they aren't getting text alerts. They wouldn't even know what website to go on. They kind of rely on me to do that. So again, it used to be that sometimes if there was going to be a disruption, you'd get a pamphlet through the door where they'd say, okay, there's going to be a disruption to the water supply on these days. It would give you time to prepare. And again, if this was just a burst pipe and they say, look, we didn't know this was going to happen, but it has been ongoing over the last 3 or 4 months. It's not something
I
that just
would
happened
say,
this
James,
weekend.
are you and the houses that you live amongst, you must be quite, you must be some of the last houses on the water mains, are you?
Yeah, we would be.
See,
We'd be the
that's
furthest
always
out.
a that's always compounds the problem. Like, I didn't know that, but I suspected it would be the case. So effectively, you are the first to lose your water probably, and the last to get it back. And if they don't get the pressure up to whack, you might not get it back until such times you start screaming from the rooftop again. It's a real disadvantage. But you are as entitled to water as the first house on that main.
Yeah, look, it's a major utility, and again, like as well, everybody's house now, their heating system will run off water, and again, only that this was a heat wave. If this happened in winter, then people's heating systems don't work either. So it's a major worry, to the point where people are already thinking, do I need to have a second auxiliary water supply? Because this can get serious, and happening in the middle of a heat wave was serious.
Yeah, but why should you have to start sourcing your own water, when you're on the public mains? Okay, well, James, it's not really a happy ending as such. Whilst there is water there, it wasn't even due to come back to today, and you don't know if it's going to go off or when it's going to go off. It's a ticking time bomb, really, effectively, your water supply. Hopefully there is some level of consistency. We'll inquire obviously to with Eishgair and see if they've anything to say in relation to this specific situation, and we'll pass that on when we get correspondence back from them. Thanks, James.
Thanks, Greg.
Bye-bye. Look after yourself. Right, Padraig Hilfety joins us. He's presenting the DL debate. Brendan has a job, which I didn't realise, so there you go. Hi,
Definitely.
Padraig.
How you doing, Greg? Are you all right?
I'm good. You're in the hot seat tonight too, are you?
I'm falling for the big shoes of Brendan Devaney. So, yeah, he does have a job,
I
Greg. And
know, it's a mystery.
no, he's working hard tonight.
Before, of course, he is. Before we get on to, I know you'll be looking at the local stuff as well, but it was a fantastic weekend of football. So many talking points. A lot of people feeling that Tyrone were really hard done by. They were pipped by Kerry in the end, but it was a fantastic game.
It was an unbelievable match, it was Tyrone of old, and yeah, you're right. There's some key points there, from to come back to the referee, on this. Now, it's not like Malachy O'Rourke, he was very disappointed, and I suppose Malachy, he would never come out and say those particular aspects, but you could see during his interviews that he was very aggrieved afterwards. A couple of key decisions, Kerry were awarded a 45 from a shot that appeared to have gone wide, off Paddy Clifford. Disputed sideline as well involving Conn Kilpatrick. There was a belief that Kieran McGeary as well should have been awarded a free, which was a clear foul, and then suppose. Those massive decisions that referees have a lot, on their plate, and the game is so fast now, Greg, to be quite honest. Genuinely, you nearly need two referees in games now, one at each side of the pitch, because those calls are huge, they're crucial as well. And there was a video circling on social media around when Tyrone were hunting down David Clifford deep into the last minute or so of action, trying to get possession back. And you could see with the pace of the game there and that, there is a case for potentially two referees. But look, disappointing from a Tyrone point of view and from a North West point of view as well, you know. But suppose there was a lot of delight of the performance that Tyrone because they came in under the radar. You know, a lot of people did not fancy them. They didn't have a good league campaign, and the daggers were out for Malachy O'Rourke. So look, you know, Tyrone have won, you know, a number of underage minors, 21s, All-Irelands. You know, they've got serious players coming through, and I suppose that's worrying from a Donegal point of view, Greg, you know. But look, good from Tyrone. And I say, Michael McMullen will join me later on the programme in the DL debate from Gaelic Life, just to reflect on, you know, where Monaghan maybe went wrong. Huge story as well from a Louth point of view, 1957, having been in an All-Ireland semi-final. So an amazing day for to be a Louth supporter.
Yeah, it goes to show maybe they should put 14 out in the semi-final, because for much of that game you wouldn't know what was going on. But I mean, we've talked a lot about reviewing Donegal's performances, you know, seeming like there was not much in the legs, lack of intensity, perhaps maybe being able to switch up mid-game, the kind of stuff that you really need to be at the top of your game. I think what we saw with the likes of Tyrone and Dublin is, you know, coming good at the right time. I wonder, are there any lessons for us to learn there? Because 14 Louth, a 14-man Louth,
yeah,
they put in some performance right to the death. And that seemingly, that type of intensity and drive and fitness is what's required to get you, you know, into the last couple of rounds of what's a very competitive championship.
Absolutely. And I suppose they went down to 14 players after the 6 minutes, you know. So, you know, to do it for that length of time is a serious going, you know. But you're right from a Donegal point of view. Brendan Kilcoyne will join me, our Highlands GAA analyst, and you know, just reflecting on where Donegal are at, you know. Like, you know, everyone's very disappointed after last weekend, knowing what's happened this weekend, you know. So there's huge questions in Donegal, you know, there's huge questions to
What
be
do you
answered
think?
and to
We're seeing teams sort of, you know, we're seeing, you've talked about Tyrone there, and there are other examples as well of teams that are building towards the future. Do you feel that this Donegal team has yet to start rebuilding for the future? You know, there's quite a few talisman there, people that have come back in for
Absolutely.
retirement. Do you believe that we're in a building process? Have we yet to start that? Are we behind the likes of Tyrone in that? Like, have they got a couple of years head start on us? What's your feeling?
Well, you know, you can only reflect on the last couple of years. You know, this year obviously very disappointing. But we've had such a roller coaster over the last number of years. And that's the very first thing I would say. Like, back-to-back Ulsters, you get into an All-Ireland semi-final, then into an All-Ireland final, you know. And suppose the trajectory from a Donegal point of view was, you know, they were going up and up and up. Where this year, I suppose, you can only reflect on this year. And you know, knee-jerk reactions, things like that. Yes, there is a building phase. You have to bring in new players, different players. But with Donegal, what we have in the county, you know, they're phenomenal footballers, and you know, it's getting the best out of them. And I suppose that's where the management comes in. You know, can they do that? And look, they have proven that they've done that, except for that All-Ireland final performance last year. This year in the championship, did we go hell for leather too early? Potentially that is true. You know, we were very disappointed after the match last week. You could see the energy just, you know, not there. And it's not like Jim McGuinness's side to be like that, you know. So, you know, Donegal have massive questions to answer. You have, you know, Jim McGuinness, of course, no better man to review where we're at. And you know, he said after the defeat that he will do that. Will Michael Murphy stay on? Will Ryan McHugh stay about? You know, I would hope they would, you know, because we do have, you know, a lot of nucleus coming through. You know, and I suppose Brendan Kilcoyne has been at the heart of, you know, not only senior, but, you know, working at the underage in the county, and he would feel, you know, we're getting a number of players through that have pedigree. And look, Donegal always have pedigree. That's the very first thing. You know, we always have very good footballers, you know, but bringing them together, building that squad up once again. Now, from a management point of view, I suppose there's questions from Jim, you know, and his backroom team. What's their decision going to be this year, Greg? And you know, when you look at outside coaches coming in, Keane O'Neill went to Kerry. You had Conall Gilligan going to Armagh. Andy McAtee up to Monaghan. Jason Sherlock to Roscommon. Aaron Kiernan to Meath. You know, and Luke Bart from Donegal over into Derry. You know, so there's questions there. You know, do we bring in someone with a new voice and, you know, maybe reinvigorate things as well? You know, And suppose from a Donegal point of view, is you know there is good footballers in the counties, keeping them together, and how we can do that. It's been a demanding couple of years, and look, hopefully Brendan Kilcoyne will unlock some of that tonight. Where we go, you know,
Dublin proved you wrote them off at your peril.
Well,
I mean, you know, people are going to say, "Oh, well, Kerry is still going to win it. Kerry is still going to win." I'll tell you, I wouldn't at this point bet against Dublin.
Well, when you look at Dublin, suppose we were just reviewing them before the game last weekend, and there's six forwards, you know, has, you know, a plethora of All-Ireland medals between them. You know, that's the first thing. Now they've got a number of players really stepping up, you know. Big performance last weekend against Donegal, against Galway yesterday, you know. Galway, for what I thought were going to go away, you know, they were really, really impressive in the first opening 10, 15 minutes, really pressing Dublin, attacking them, cutting through them, you know, and they might have had a call for a penalty on Big Maher. I thought, you know, potentially it could have been a potential penalty, seen ones given before. They didn't get that call. And Dublin, you know, in Croke Park, they're going to be very, very hard to beat, and it's going to be a mouthwatering encounter. You know, has Dublin enough to beat Kerry? That's the question. You look. You
I don't want to. I was going to ask
you
about
Fortnite thing.
I was going to ask you about Mayo, but I don't want to jinx it. We'll maybe just let them try and come in under the radar. You know, they might.
Well, you know, Mayo got into this game like 19 points were scored by Kobe McDonald, Dara Byrne, and Ryan O'Donoghue. Now, Dara Byrne, and Kobe are still teenagers. You know, so. Yeah, look, hey, Mayo against Louth, that game, you know, there's no script written here. Louth are going to go in with a lot of emotion, a lot of, you know, like, but to Louth, to their credit, you know, they've dug out big performances, and so have Mayo, you know, and okay. Mayo have performed really well. So loads of talking points tonight, Greg. And,
yeah, indeed. And of course, there's plenty of interest in Division 1 as well. St Union's 2-9. Glenties 12, St Michael's 114, Glenswilly 9, Four Masters 214, Termin 14. That league is starting to take shape in terms of those that are potentially going down, those that will contest the final. As I said earlier on, the big result from my perspective, Neave Breach into Division 2, which was fantastic. But tell us about your guests there, finally, if you don't mind, Porrick, because it's going to be a cracking show.
We've Brendan Kilcoyne on. Brendan, of course, former Donegal selector, worked with Donegal at underage for a number of years, really knows the players throughout, and as I say, he's been watching them, and really we're going to get a bit of an in-depth analysis on, you know, where he thinks Donegal needs to potentially look at, and, you know, look at those permutations of, you know, if we brought an outside coach, how that would impact the squad, you know. So we're going to spend a good time with Brendan, really reflecting on that, you know, and okay. having a look at where Donegal needs to go, and, you know, what's his feeling on Jim McGuinness.
Brilliant.
And Michael Murphy.
And as you mentioned, Michael McMullen from the Gaelic Life is on as well. Porrick, thanks so very much indeed. That's live just after 7 o'clock this evening. Right. Minister Peter Burke, Minister for Enterprise, Tourism and Employment. The 9% hospitality VAT rate comes into effect from the 1st of July. Good morning, Minister. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to your listeners.
Right, okay. So just to be clear, what benefit, what sectors, I suppose, of hospitality benefit here?
So the key sectors that will benefit by this reduction in VAT are your hospitality and food services, your catering services, your hairdressers, many key businesses that you would see on the main street of many towns and villages right throughout our rural communities. And this will give them an opportunity to have an additional 4.5% in their margin to really grapple with the increasing costs of doing business in that particular sector over the last number of years, and hopefully put them in a good position to be more resilient in the months and years ahead.
Accommodation, that remains at 13.5%.
It does indeed, absolutely. So this is for food services, your hospitality, catering and hairdressers.
What kind of an impact do you think this will have on the sector and its sustainability?
I think it will make a lot of businesses viable that are currently under pressure. If you look at the data in the hospitality sector, particularly that was published by the CSO over the last quarter, which shows a reduction of 8.8% in employment. So it really shows that of all the 13 sectors in the economy that are growing, this is one that is critically under pressure. And obviously this measure will give them an opportunity to give certainty, first of all, because this was an annual argument at the budgetary process. Now it's off the table. It's a permanent measure and will allow businesses plan accordingly, but also gives them a bit more back in their margin. And we've that aligned with our new tourism policy, a new era for Irish tourism, which we'll be looking for 7% growth in visitor numbers and spend over the coming years to 2031. And again, that will give a huge amount of economic benefit to many rural communities right across our country.
Yeah, we're coming off the back of the latest statistics which show a slowing down in hospitality insolvency, which of course there is some crossover in this area. If you don't mind, just a quick question, Minister, what your view is on potential tourism tax. We've been speaking to some local hoteliers here that are concerned if there was a levy for every visitor. We're not clear whether it would be just tourists, whether it would be internal travel, whether or not it could apply, you know, in Donegal as it might in Dublin, where it seems to be addressing a Dublin problem. Where are you at in that conversation?
Well, first of all, I would share their concern. I think Irish tourism last year had a very difficult year. We brought forward our new tourism plan in December of last year, again, which we're looking to get the sector into a growth phase again. My instinct would be, as someone who has a lot of experience in taxation, is that you have to ensure a sector is growing before you put additional taxes on it. And critically for the hospitality sector, you know, we need to remain competitive. I have been speaking to a lot of international buyers who bring tourists into Ireland, a lot of those travel operators, and they're very concerned about competitiveness and our price or value proposition. So we have to be very careful on this. The other point I would make is that, you know, we need to look at more reform in this country. A lot of those councils in question, you know, they reduce their property tax every year. Any revenue raising power that they have, they tend to walk away from it. I think we need to see councils being more responsible, raising revenue where they have the power to do so and demonstrate their authority to do it, and critically demonstrate how they're spending it in the locality rather than essentially looking for soft ways to raise revenue. So we just have to be very careful in relation to that. And as Tourism Minister, I'm very keen to note that there's no commitment for a tourist tax in the programme for government. That's the North Star by how the government is run. So it's something that I will look at, but as an evidence-based politician, the evidence will have to be put before me, and critically in relation to what local authorities are currently doing themselves already.
And I think too, what the big factor is, and what would be great reassurance is that we consider, you know, for instance, how we're so reliant on Northern Ireland business, and the idea that someone from Northern Ireland might have to pay such a levy or a tax into Donegal is unthinkable. Just finally, a reminder, by the way, for the businesses, make sure all of these changes, if they're applicable, are reflected to the customer. That's a bit of a cost in and of itself, but that's an important part of this. Briefly, Minister.
Yeah, look, and competitiveness will do this, because the more people we have setting up business, I think the more competition you'll have. I just want to be very honest with your listeners. I think it's an important point, is that, you know, it's very difficult to have a viability measure to help businesses and an affordability measure at the same time, because customers may not see, you know, a very significant change in price, but what they will see is their businesses growing. And through competitiveness, you'll see prices coming down, because hopefully you'll have more businesses operating.
And I think, in fairness, certainly the listeners to this show realise that this is not necessarily going to lead to cheaper bills. This is about supporting the industry, which supports the job and the community and so on and so forth. Minister, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Look after yourself, Minister Peter O'Rourke. The Belfast Barge put up a post recently stating that due to uncertainty around ticket sales, they've had to cancel Friday and Saturday evening shows as part of the Belfast City Blues Festival. May be of interest to people in the Northwest or not, but I think really what it was is an indication of what's not just happening with that festival, but what we have seen happen with smaller festivals around the country, and perhaps leading to the likelihood that we're going to see less and less going forward. John Muldan, he's a musician, of course, but also former organiser of the Swellfest. You might remember that, out on Arranmore. John, these types of posts, as I say, they're becoming perhaps more frequent or perhaps less frequent as no one organises these types of festivals. As a former festival organiser, what are the challenges here?
Oh, God, there's plenty. You know, you think, first of all, the marketing of a festival is, in order to do it effectively, the cost of that in itself is significant. The amount of people that it takes to do the preparation, I don't think that the general public are aware of how much stuff goes on in prep for a festival, you know, and how many people are involved. You know, just to even to set up a small festival like we had, we would have started working on that, planning it in November for a July festival. Mm. You know, you know, I suppose one of the greatest indicators of the challenges at the moment is there's a very, very good, well-run festival in Limavady in Derry, called the Stendal Festival, which is running this coming weekend. And they've stated themselves they're in their 16th year, Greg, and they're struggling, and they're looking at basically having a hiatus to see if they can do some kind of a reset in order to make it more sustainable, because at the moment it isn't. They've yet to sell out a year, and you know, when you think, I'm sure you know plenty of people who have been to it, and they'll all comment on how fantastic a festival it is, how family friendly it is, and the tickets are well priced. You know, they have great camping facilities for children and everything else. The amount of money that it takes and the amount of effort that it takes to put that in place is massive, and most of that labour goes unpaid.
If you've got Lewis Capaldi or someone coming to Ireland, you know, they might sell out months in advance or have some level of certainty or cash flow to keep things going. What was your experience of ticket sales, you know, even in the big years of the Swell Festival? Like, you know, they say if you build it, they will come. You'd like to know they were coming in advance, but you don't really get sight of that, do you? That's not how people attend these type of festivals.
No. That's entirely right. Our experience was that most people waited until the week of the festival. I mean, you talk about, you know, flying by the seat of your pants, really. You know, we would have had the first year was, let's just say pretty much everybody worked for nothing. The first year. So the first year we were okay. We got a wee bit more ambitious then as it went on. But the fact of the matter is that if our festival started on the Friday, by the Wednesday, we might have sold maybe 100 tickets, and we would have needed to sell at least 400 in order to be able to cover our costs. Yeah. So, you know, we were each year, in fact, we cleared ourselves the first year. We lost a good bit of money the second year. We lost even more the third year. We managed to pull back most of the loss in the fourth year. And by the time we were finished, so at one point we were 11 grand down. And when we finished up, we were just about 4.5 grand down. Yeah, okay. And that was running the festival for 5 years.
But is the market changing? Like, say I wanted to organise something from June to the end of August. I mean, pick a weekend. There's something on everywhere every single weekend. You throw in sport, you throw in the draw to Belfast and Dublin with major summer concerts and festivals. And maybe, too, you have to look at the type of music people are listening to now. You need an audience, right? You need an audience for anything to be successful. I mean, even look at Rory Gallagher's festival, huge down there. They're facing their own challenges, of course. But half of the people actually travel into the country to attend that. So would it be sustainable with a domestic audience on its own at scale? Probably not. So the point is that, you know, is there an appetite or a market for it? It's nice because it's the arts and it's culture and it's expression, and we love to see that. But I wonder, just with all the other pulls and draws, is there the market there for these types of small festivals now?
That's the big question, really. You know, I suppose if you take a rock, our festival was kind of mainly rock music, although we did have an Irish music stage as well. You'd say that at least you would hope that the audience is there for those bands to come, that you don't need to get grants, you don't need to get this, that or the other in order to be able to persuade people to come and to make it sustainable. But it's the, I suppose it's the cost of the infrastructure to make it, an experience outside of just going to see a band in a bar or a venue.
Yeah, of course.
A festival is a whole different thing because it's that whole, congregation of a whole lot of other people and hopefully in good weather and just, moving from place to place, listening to a load of new bands that they might not necessarily heard before. You know, and it's that opportunity for those bands to be able to get out and play in front of an audience and perhaps gather some new fans and whatnot. You know?
Yeah.
But as I say, with any of the small festivals, the idea that you could put on a show that will attract people without getting some kind of funding is virtually impossible.
Yeah, exactly. Because obviously you've got your insurance costs, you have to have security, and then you're relying on whether or not it will rain or not, even though you've probably spent thousands hiring in marquees and such. All right, John, we'll see how things go into the future. John Muldowney there. One thing that can still go ahead, it can be saved, is the Summer Splash in the Twin Towns. Hi, Eunan.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
All right. What's this event about and why is there a risk to it not going ahead?
Yeah, so this is we are calling it a Summer Splash event. It's a family fun event at Trusclough in Balbuffet, organised by the town from Basic in Balbuffet and Stenorder. So we wanted to put on a little event, a community event for the town. And we have the wonderful Trusclough, 10 minutes from the town. We had done a raft race event there Easter last year, and it was very successful. So we wanted to turn it into more like a family fun day and do some kids activities, some fun activities for the kids, fun and games, and then have a raft event, one of these where you build your own raft. And we have some fun with that for the over 16s. So that was taking place this coming Saturday, the 4th of July. But like the previous caller had said, we are struggling with entries for the event. So we have until tomorrow evening to get entries in, or unfortunately we would have to cancel the event.
Which is a shame. So just sell it a bit more for me. What is it, family fun by the water, on the water?
Yeah, so there'll be fun games for kids. So the venue's at Trusclough, so there's a beautiful lock outside the Balbuffet. Yeah. So there'll be fun and games for the kids. There'll be water games. There'll be some games, little relay races for kids from 4 to 11 or 4 to 12 years of age. So that would take place from 4 to 6. And from 6 o'clock to 8 then, if we get enough entries, we would have a raft event. We would have a couple of heats for the raft event and the final. Mm. And we have a €500 cash prize for the winners of those teams. So we're encouraging all groups, teams of four, to build their own raft.
It's great fun. We used to have similar down in Mullen and Sol, and it was brilliant. The whole community came out. It's fun as well because you hope people's raft falls to bits, right? I mean, I'm just going to be honest with you.
Yeah, of course. And that's
what you hope.
That's part of the fun. So
but it can only go ahead with the numbers. The way, you know? So if you're in the area or if you're listening at work, even an express an interest to go. The weather's going to be nice. It's going to be milder again, probably sunshine, and at the very worst, some warm showers. So how do people express an interest if they want to maybe get a raft together? And I think really, if you get enough entrants in that, the rest will follow. So I think that's really what this call out is about, isn't it?
Yeah, so the main part of the event is the raft race itself. We need the entries for that, for the event, basically simply the event to take place. The kids event won't happen unless the raft event. And we're going to have barbecue music as well up there. So, it'd be a real family fun day out, summer event. So the Basic BASICC Facebook page has all the details. So anybody that's interested, it'd be great if, just go to the page and they get details there.
Save the summer splash. You know, sometimes we're asking people to dig deep into their pockets. This is just about committing to having a bit of fun, isn't it? All right, Eunan, thanks for that. Good luck with it. I hope it works out for you. Let us know, Eunan Quinn there. Let's see some of your comments here on football. Jim McGuinness reminds me of Jack Charlton when he came in first. He had the cream of the crop. Now it's time to start building a new team, full stop. I wouldn't agree with you. I think Jim McGuinness came in when Donegal football was at its lowest ebb, absolutely in the doldrums, and he's brought in some amazing young players, and there's more to follow as well. I think, and I don't know anything about this, it's not up to me, people know more than that. I think really about the level of, maybe we should reserve, because you hear out of the camp sometimes that, you know, training and the drills and all that can be really, really intense. Are we making sure that we're leaving enough in the legs for when, you know, it's match day? I don't know, but we'll see. And no offence, but people like talking about sport, and that's all we're doing is a bit of speculation. Right, some comments, as I mentioned here, on VAT. My bill runs a bus, runs a tour bus, and he can no longer keep it going because everything is getting too expensive. I'm hearing that all right. We used to go to hotels in Ireland four times a year. The last one we priced was over €400. Meanwhile, we just went to Spain for €700. It's no wonder tourism is struggling in Ireland. Yeah, look at the minimum wage, VAT and all that type of stuff. You know, and you can sort of see why it's far more difficult to do business here. This helps every hospitality sector except pubs who don't serve food. This is outright discrimination. They're struggling every bit as much as the others. Please do not call the wet pubs. And the bottom line is there's a lot of, if you go to any town, there's a lot of bars that are associated with serving food and accommodation, and they're competing with the pub that doesn't two doors up. It could be difficult for them, no doubt about it. We were just talking about festivals and concerts. People need to pull together to support small festivals like this community one and the music ones. Ireland used to always support their own. What happened to us? No neighbour attitude anymore. Like, people's interests and young people's interests vary. Like, you know, if you get a group of 18 to 21-year-olds now, what music are they likely to be listening to? Actually, country up here is still going to be really, really popular. A lot of it's pop. Is it, you know, metal music? Is it rock pop music? You know, look at the charts. I don't know. But at the end of the day, you can't make people go to something they're not interested in either. Could that be part of it? Hi, Greg. I was at The Cure in Marley Park on Friday. We met people from as far away as Texas and Singapore that travelled to Dublin for the show. That comes from Gar in Remelton. Gar, was it any good? What did you think were Remelton good? Were The Cure good? He still can do it. I would like to have seen that, actually. And there seems to be some fantastic shows at Marley Park. On the issue of Chrysler, is there a serious issue with the gas infrastructure? It must be addressed. Well, you see, that's the purpose of an investigation, but you can find out if that's the case. But this caller says, I was not aware of the legislation in relation to gas regulation. Could the whole country be at risk? Those poor people went into a public place just as we all do every day. Well, listen, no one is trying to predetermine the outcome of a public inquiry. But I know, speaking to the families, that they have great concerns in this space. And they also have great concerns that there could be, quite literally, and I don't mean this insensitively, ticking time bombs elsewhere in the country, that there needs to be changes to catch that before we see another tragedy. I went to tax my car on Friday in the motor tax office in Letterkenny, and why is it only open on Tuesdays and Thursdays? Bloody ridiculous, they say. The service that DCC provides is getting worse. What about people who don't do online? Well, Tuesdays and Thursdays, I'm sorry, that seems to be the way it is, and it's been like that for some time. You're not the first person to complain about that, but the first time I've heard about it for quite some time. Can you please highlight Kilmacrenan Graveyard getting out of control with weeds and rushes? I'm not sure. Is there an annual cleanup coming up soon? It often happens at this time of year ahead of the graveyard mass. I don't know the situation there locally. Greg, they say we've a booming economy, but my daughter has been looking for a summer job. The response of each shop, cafe and restaurant is they're not hiring this year. It's very disheartening. She's a good girl and keen to raise some income for herself. listen, it's half the battle with younger people is them being interested in working. Let us know the area that you're in and we'll throw that out in case someone in that area is looking for someone. I'll tell you, you can't beat hiring someone that wants to work. It's a huge advantage. So if you want to let us know what area you're in, we won't be any more specific than that. Maybe we can connect you or her with a job. Scammers will have a field day when the new European custom charges kick in. Beware if you haven't been scammed. The right scam hasn't come to you yet. Yes, indeed. People are facing, and people are quite upset, actually. I think you Temu shoppers and Shein shoppers are going to face a levy per product. Is it 3 or 4 euro? I don't really shop in those two outlets, but I know you can fill your basket with pretty low value items, and now there's going to be a charge on those items, and I'm not sure you can get around it by importing them into the north either, because of the protocols agreed between north and south in Britain. But yeah, some very unhappy younger people particularly, I think, that are going to see quite a few quid added to their basket as they're about to check out. AI is pretty good. It's not as good as they make out, to be honest with you. Like, I use AI all the time, and it is useful, and it's just not really there yet, I think, in terms of what people believe it's good for. Kathleen Murray is an animal advocate and a regular on the show. Hi, Kathleen.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
I'm good. Now, there are reports that one in 10 pet owners are using AI chatbots instead of consulting a vet. And the most common queries include asking for advice on behaviour, body language and diet. Look, I think there is probably some decent information to be gleaned using AI out there. But you would have your concerns, would you, that it shouldn't be a replacement for the proper care of your pets?
Yeah, well, I agree. AI is great and it is the future. It's not like it's going away anytime soon, and more people are starting to get used to it now and using it for all kinds of things. But it's really useful for just basic stuff, for like general things, like if you had a baby, like to feed it, change its nappy, basically things like that that are fairly general for every baby. But in the dog world, every dog is different. As in, every baby is different. And if your baby starts crying in the middle of the night all of a sudden, or gets sudden diarrhea or vomiting, there could be various different reasons for it. And so there could be a lot of misdiagnosis if you use AI for things like that. And a lot of behaviour problems are diagnosed on observation, when you actually see the dog in action, because there are several different reasons why a dog may do something. And what works for your dog might not work for another dog. And AI gets their information from books and journals and the web and all kinds of sources. And some of these may actually be outdated as well.
But also, too, what I find with AI, it's the quality of what you're inputting determines what you get out. So if you perhaps don't explain something correctly or whatever it might be, you know, like I would say it actually would be more useful for a vet who can actually input, you know, quality data from observation and get a bit of help from AI than your average person at home. Because, you know, as I say, it'll only spit out what you put in. And, you know, that could be the weak point of the whole process.
That's right. You could put in just a general question and you can get back a general answer. It's not specific. You need to be very specific with AI if you're looking for a specific detail, and you need to know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it can be very good for some things, and it can be very bad for others. And if you have, say, for example, like a dog that's having aggression problems, mm-hmm. or whatever, or is starting to growl and you're not sure why, then if you're starting to go with what AI says, you may actually be kicking the can down the road. Because you might try this, you might try that. You could be putting yourself in danger because you could inflame the situation. Because as I say, like there's like at least 7 different types of aggression. You need to know exactly what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
And you need to know exactly what the outcome is going to be, what your goal is, what your method is going to be. You know, you need to have a plan, and AI is no good for that kind of thing because they haven't seen your dog. They haven't seen it in action. You probably haven't put in enough information for them to actually get a picture of what it is that you're actually really dealing with. And sometimes owners will say, oh, well, it's not that bad, or my dog is just doing this. They don't see maybe the danger coming.
It can work
very well for some things, but I definitely would not be using it for diagnosing health issues.
I wouldn't rely on it for anything at all. Okay, Kathleen, good advice. Yeah. Thanks so very much indeed. And Kathleen responded to a call from us because the RSPCA in Britain raised the concerns the new trend may lead to complacency among pet owners and untreated illnesses in animals. So you can see where that could be an issue. A quick thank you. I'm an old aged pensioner and someone helped me yesterday. I was at the Hob in Letterkenny and I went to my car and lo and behold, the battery was dead. I saw a man parked up and asked him for a push down the hill to help it start. It didn't work. A lady was working in the Hob and must have been watching us. She came down and had a set of jump leads. The first man jump started my car with her jump leads. I thanked them all at the time, but I just want to thank them again so, so much. I've never met as nice a lady. Well, if you were that lady and that gentleman, congratulations to you because you can feel good about yourself. That person really, really appreciates. I'm 67 and I've worked all my life and I'm still working because I can't afford to retire. And although I have several health problems and I'm on a lot of medication, I can't get a medical card, not even a GP visit card. I've tried several times, but I'm refused every time. I was born in Ireland and paid tax all my life, but I'm entitled to nothing. There's something very wrong with this country. Now, you would know that we've spoken to Daniel O'Donnell in the past about his Facebook page or his fan base being exploited by scammers because they are so, obviously, he's so popular and there can be vulnerabilities there that can be exploited. And it won't surprise you to learn that Nathan Carter, another huge country music star, his fans have been targeted. Nathan joins us now. Nathan, great to chat to you. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning, Greg. No problem at all.
Like, I know you've, all the top artists have a very good relationship with your fans, and it's gutting, isn't it, when you hear, that their fandom of you is being exploited by these unscrupulous people?
It's really sad, to be honest. This recently was the third incident that we've had families contacting us saying that their relatives have been cheated out of money and scammed by people with the same profile picture as my own on Instagram. And a lot of the time they're very convincing. They ask for vouchers, sometimes Amazon vouchers, and which by the way aren't traceable then. So that's probably one of the things to watch out for. But they can be very, very convincing, unfortunately, and especially the older generation.
Mm. Now, the most recent case
that they're actually talking to.
Yeah, the most recent case, Greg. No, it's my fault, Nathan. The most recent case, a huge amount of money. It's kind of like in the space of catfishing and scamming and all manner of things. What do we know about this poor lady in Britain?
Yeah, so she'd sent numerous transferred numerous times money over to this scammer, and we were contacted by the family. And in the end, I actually rang the lady. I got the number, but she still didn't believe that it wasn't me she was talking to, because they were that convincing and had told her that different stories to keep this quiet in between me and her. And unfortunately, yeah, she was scammed an awful lot of money. And it's happening time and time again. It's so sad. And I think people need to let especially their elderly relatives know exactly what's going on. And this is happening all the time. And to just be vigilant online.
Yeah, because there can be vulnerabilities, general vulnerabilities. I'm not saying it's the case in this situation, but the person obviously pretended to be you, obviously then made some sort of play that, you know, this was a very, you know, you were vulnerable or something, and this was a private conversation that needed to be kept quiet, and she was convinced it was you. I mean, it's perfect if you get the right person, but terrible for them. But you can see exactly how it works. It's heartbreaking.
It is. It's so sad. Unfortunately, that poor lady won't get any money back because there's no trace, which is just, you know, probably her life savings have now gone. The family are devastated. It's awful stuff. It really is. And people need to be aware of it. And the like of the interview I'm doing now. Hopefully we'll save someone from being scammed.
That's all you can do, really, unfortunately, is get that message out there, put up the clarifications on your official social media and do the rounds to try and let people know.
We have put up time and time again, you know, about this on Instagram and Facebook, but unfortunately people are very vulnerable, and especially if they're lonely and there's no one talking to them, you know, if they get a message like this from someone they, you know, follow or they like, sometimes it's very believable. So people just need to watch out for their family members and make them aware of what's going on.
All right. OK, well, good advice. Nathan, before I let you go, how's the summer going for you? I mean, you're busy all year round. I imagine that your diary is absolutely jammers for the summer.
Well, I've actually had the last few weeks off.
What?
I was in London at the weekend watching Garth Brooks, which was amazing, and went to see Harry Styles as well. So
okay.
A bit of a busman's holiday watching and, you know, picking up tips and trying to figure out what to do on stage. But no, July and August.
Well, you're still 36. Could you keep up with Harry Styles? That guy runs marathons left, right and centre.
There's not a hope.
Are you running around the place?
About 10 kilometres on the stage. I'm out of breath running from the left to the right of the stage. He was doing laps and laps. I was well impressed.
Yeah.
But no, thankfully the summer is busy. I think the only Donegal date we're doing, we're playing at the Mary of Dunlow Festival on the 1st of August. So that's our only Donegal date this year. But yeah, hopefully it'll be a good one and the weather stays good and people will come out and support the local festivals.
I've no doubt about that. Funny, we were just talking about festivals and the support of them and all that kind of stuff. All right, Nathan, looking forward to seeing you up for Mary from Dunlow, which kicks off just under 4 weeks from now, and continued success. And just, you know, if you go, I mean, you're a fit guy, right? But maybe just start doing the marathons and you can keep up with Harry.
Get on the treadmill, okay. Maybe.
Good luck to you. Thanks so much, Nathan Carter, there. And finishing on a lighter note, and it's great to see Nathan continue to doing so well. But, you know, even if Nathan and his team put these posts up on their socials, they will try and find a person that might say, you might have seen on the socials, but listen, that's hiding something. The problem is such and such. Could you help me? You can see how people can be exploited. So I think get the message out there, especially if someone might be more easily influenced. And, you know, often we think it's because of age, because older people are more trusting. It's not that they're in any way lesser, and no one's implying that, but it's a generational thing, isn't it, where we can be more trusting and often sort of look for the best in people, and that can be to our own disadvantage. But it could be anyone. Really, that is potentially exploitable, right? So you understand where I'm coming from. So just put the message out there, share that post. Staying with festivals, yes, I got an update on The Cure. Yes, Greg, it was brilliant. Robert Smith still sounds the same at 67 as he did 40 years ago. It was a flawless performance. Yeah, I've seen him live a few times. Was it Olivia Rodriguez he joined on stage? Was it her? There's a couple of those girls that I mix up. I think it was her. And and you know the funny thing about him too, he's always had his own style. And sometimes you think when someone hits, you know, their late 60s or whatever, you think, oh, come on, grow up. I think he's still, that whole goth thing, he still carries it off really, really well. The Cure, it was funny how times have changed, because when we were going out, me and my mates were going out, The Cure were massive at that time. And there was it was a massive grungy time, and people were going out genuinely. Like, this is how I recall, they were wearing big clots and big jumpers and all that type of stuff. The dress code's changed slightly now for going out. Whether it's good or bad for the guys and girls, I don't know. But I'll tell you, you didn't see quite as much skin when I was going out. That's a fact. Staying with festivals, it's the Irish government that has every single thing in this country destroyed. That goes for every single thing, festivals and all. Well, I'm all for holding the government to account, but they support a lot of festivals, and there's a lot of festivals that really wouldn't be up and running. I think they support the Rory Gallagher Festival is one that benefits greatly from government funding, my understanding is, and it probably couldn't run without it. And it was a private company gone bust that has banjacked that for 2027. Hopefully it can be pulled around, but at this stage, and I don't want to list off other festivals, but there definitely is financial support for festivals. There's a list comes out and I've seen it, but I don't want to misremember. Do you understand? Someone messaged in on, here's another one on scams actually whilst we're on that. There's a scam doing the rounds at the moment offering 30% off a mobile phone contract. They told me the first four digits of my card. I've now realised that everyone has the same four digits. Wow. Of course, yeah. Interesting. Thankfully, I didn't give them any money. Fair play to you. Right, back with more after a short break. And do you know what we're going to be talking about, by the way? Illegal parking of camper vans. We love to see the traffic coming into the county. It's fantastic. Let's not be snobby. The people in camper vans and caravans, they're spending big in the region too. But sometimes the infrastructure isn't there, or if it's there, it's not used. We're going to be talking to Councillor Jimmy Brogan after these. The Cathaoirleach of the Donegal Municipal District is Councillor Jimmy Brogan, and he joins us now. Hi, Jimmy. How are you getting on?
Morning, Greg. How are things?
Good, good, good. As I said just before the break there, listen, it's great to see the county busy and, you know, the more money comes into the region to support businesses, the better. But there is an ongoing problem with camper vans, particularly, I think, around Donegal Town. There's been issues for as long as I can remember. What's happening more recently?
Well, Greg, as you say, it's gone on as long as you can remember and as long as I can remember. But it's getting, obviously, it's getting worse and worse because there's more and more people coming to Donegal Town and camper vans. Now, listen, we welcome everybody coming to Donegal Town. It's great to see people coming to Donegal Town. Donegal Town is thriving, like, you know, it's one of the busiest towns around, and it's great to see it. But there's people coming that, listen, unfortunately, they don't give much thought to other people. You know, what's happened over the weekend is we've had people parking across the footpath now, parking across footpaths and stuff, like, you know. And
where's the hot spots, Jimmy, just for those who know the layout of the town?
Well, listen, unfortunately, the pier. If you go online and look for somewhere to stay for a camper van in Donegal Town, the first place is going to come up with the pier.
Mm.
Now, the pier isn't a camper van park. It's a public car park. There's a brand new camper van park out in Mount Charles, and there's a place out in Clare where people can come and they have the facilities to deal with camper van parks.
But you know what's happening, don't you? But, in the circles, on the forums, on Facebook pages, it's there, handy access to the pubs and restaurants and what have you. Unless they're actively discouraged, it's going to continue to be the case, isn't it? They're going to keep parking there. And then, of course, what's happening with the wastewater and rubbish? I'm not saying it's being dumped wrongly, don't get me wrong, but, you know, those facilities aren't there, are they?
No, well, see, like I say, that's the pier is a car park. It's not a camper van park.
Yeah.
And there is, like I say, there's the place in Mount Charles and there's a place out in Clare that you can go and you have all the facilities to dump your waste and everything else, you know. But people do park at the pier, and that's just the way it is. We just have to deal with it, you know. And there is a plan when the new parking bylaws are implemented, and this is a long, painstaking process. Yeah. Process.
But Jimmy, you'll see.
Years and years, and I don't know when it's going to be finished.
You'll see in Bundoran, for instance, along there. I think they're discouraged from parking along, say, for instance, the car park down by the sea, just next to Waterworld. There, why not at this point? Do we not put in height barriers?
And Bundoran's slightly different in that there's within the town of Bundoran, within probably 50 or 60 meters of the shore, there is a couple of camper vans.
I know, but people will try and park for free, is what I'm saying, right? So,
but they shouldn't. Yeah. In Donegal Town, it's slightly different in that you can't blame people in a way because, you know, people want to be safe in the town, and the camper van parking
places are outside the town. Why not put, you know, height restriction barriers in and stop it? Just stop
it tomorrow. We spoke to that to the council, but the council the roads section they don't want to do it. Like, you know, for several reasons, they say they have different, people that need to use the pier and need to go into the back of it. You know, obviously, if you're going to deliver to the Central Hotel or the Abbey Hotel, or, you know, you need to go into the car park in order to deliver your stuff, you know, so you have vans and lorries going in there to deliver stuff. So anyway, the roads office are very they don't want to do it.
Like, so what's the solution? Obviously, Jimmy, there's not mean you aren't going to fix it talking about it. So what then, if it's not barriers, if it's not sort of putting in, redesigning it in some way where there are narrower parking spaces or stuff that you see elsewhere. You can't make people use the facilities that are in Mount Charles, there's some in Killybegs and out in Clare, right? So what is the solution then? The council don't want to put up the barriers, as you said, so what?
Well, once the parking bylaws that we hear so much about, that have been on for years and years, but there's a public consultation coming up now shortly. So once that's started, they can charge oversized vehicles for a certain to park at the pier for a certain length of time. At the minute, there isn't the rules, the laws there to charge these people. But once these parking bylaws are in place, they'd be fit to charge people for oversized vehicles, daytime parking and a nighttime parking, like, you know, and that should hopefully alleviate the problem. Well, it'll be helping. I mean, like, you know, it'll not solve the problem, but it'll help it anyway.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed, Councillor Jimmy Brogan there, Cathaoirleach of Donegal Municipal District. And it's one of those, isn't it, whereby you want you want the traffic, you want the people, but at the same time it has to balance with people's everyday life. Paula Leonard is CEO of the Alcohol Forum Ireland and joins us on the programme now. Thanks very much, Paula, for taking the call.
Thank you, Greg, for having the coverage this morning. We're delighted.
Yes, delighted. You're moving to a new brand. What's going on?
We are moving to a new brand. So for 22 years, Alcohol Forum Northwest, Alcohol Forum Ireland, there have been various iterations of sort of that Alcohol Forum branding. And I suppose over the last couple of years, we've become conscious that we had sort of outgrown that name. We aren't a forum anymore. We're very much a charity that has both local footprint and a national reach. And also the other thing that was really important to us was an awful lot of people who are involved in the organisation as service users, as volunteers, as family members, felt that the name wasn't something that they loved. Mm. It wasn't something that excited them. It wasn't something that they connected to in any great sense. And so we listened to that. And for the last year, we've been doing consultations with students, health and social care, cyber psychology. We have consulted with people in recovery. We've consulted with service users, with our board, with anyone basically we could find. And today is the big reveal moment in terms of who we will be as we go into the next chapter of the organisation. So, yeah,
it's a big day for us. Don't tease. What's the new name?
Well, we gave a teaser of it on Friday when we had an International World Health Organization event in Dublin. Mm. So we are moving to a new brand, which is Well Ireland.
Well Ireland.
Well Ireland, okay. Yeah.
I like that because, you know yourself, I've fallen foul of Alcohol Action Ireland, you know, misnaming it because some, you know, it's very
indeed
close to it, so it distinguishes, yeah, it distinguishes you from any other brands. Well Ireland, and does that mean too that there is does it demonstrate a focus beyond just alcohol?
Well, one of the things actually, you know, that has been confusing about our name is, so while at the policy end we very much focus on alcohol, at the service delivery end we have focused on alcohol and other drugs and other addictions for numbers of years now. And if you look at the latest statistics from the Health Research Board that came out last week, you know, one of the biggest concerns that health services have in this country is that what we're now facing is sort of polyuse. So it's alcohol with cocaine, alcohol with, you know, methamphetamines, alcohol and other drugs.
Yeah, the trend, so, what you see is it's like a scale,
yeah,
the trend of the phraseology used there, it's alcohol and now we're,
yeah,
seeing a resurgence. We're seeing a resurgence of cocaine where it might have been weed previously, and you know, obviously that,
yeah,
common denominator there. But it's not often, but though of course it is often that it's just alcohol. It could be alcohol and gambling. It could be alcohol and anything.
It could be. Mm. It could be. And I suppose Well Ireland, you know, we will now have sort of our sub brands will move to. All of the work around alcohol-related brain injury will become Well Brain Health. All of our work around supporting families will become Well Family Support. Our under-18s alcohol addiction service in Cavan Monaghan will become Well Young People. So really, this new brand, which was suggested, you know, by one of our staff team who works with people with an alcohol-related brain injury, that suggestion among many in a long list was that really this name allowed us to start with the end in mind.
I think it's a it gets the Greg Hughes thumbs up anyway for me. Not that that counts for anything.
Because
we use alcohol. There's a strong message with alcohol, and you know you can't beat people over the head with it all of the time. Not that that's part of the reason for changing the name, but it just. I think it's a more, it feels more positive approach. I don't know, and it works very well with the various strands of all the work that you're doing, which we talk about regularly, and we will again
Indeed.
Into the future. I'll just have to get used to saying, Paula Leonard, are you the CEO of Well Ireland?
I am now.
There
indeed, that will be what we become.
I've logged it in. Thanks so much, Paula. Good luck with the launch.
Lovely.
Take care of yourself. Bye bye. Now, that launch will take place this morning at Ungrianon Theatre, Letterkenny, 11:30. It's for the official rebrand party. So, 20 years working hard with families, individuals, and communities, not just locally here, but right across the country. And I like it. Well, younger people, well, you know, acquired brain injury. It works really, dare I say, well. Let me see. TV licences. We talked about this and we got a laggard texting in a couple of days later. That's not an insult, by the way. It just means a slight delay. I just don't pay the TV licence because I rarely watch TV anymore. Why should I pay RTE when I watch more Netflix and Prime? Now, give us something worth paying for and I might. The two games yesterday, would that convince you? Exposés on the health service? I don't know. Yeah. The market is so stretched at the moment that linear terrestrial TV just seems... And eventually it'll happen to radio as well. They're introducing DAB now, reintroducing DAB, which will see a plethora of new stations. And is that good for the listener? I don't know. We'll see. Who knows? We're not going anywhere, though. Right, that's where we leave it on the show today. Thank you so much for listening, watching, contributing, whatever you did. It's just good to have you on board. Thanks for just... being there, for existing, right? We're going to be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 a.m.